Good morning, church. You know, for several years, this church was a participant in the cold weather shelter program sponsored by our local homeless alliance. And during those years, when the temperature was predicted to fall below freezing overnight, we'd feed and shelter up to 30 homeless men for the night. Now, this program was and remains important because many unhoused individuals in Austin won't go to local shelters on most nights. Many sleep in the open, under bridges, in doorways, or in makeshift camps. But on freezing nights, many more of those individuals do seek shelter and would overwhelm the local facilities. Participating churches provide a safe, alternative, potentially life-saving place for those individuals to go. And during the years we participated in this program, I would never failed to be amazed by the experience. First, our volunteers were truly amazing, including, I bet, some of you here this morning. Some brought food, others prepared and served it. Some washed dishes, distributed blankets. Many would eat and talk with the guests. The generosity and the genuine Christian love that I observed among our volunteers was truly remarkable. But the other group that always impressed me was the guests. 30 or so homeless men would eat the simple but ample meal offered and then sleep on the floor of our sanctuary of our older building across the parking lot. As you might expect, many were not particularly clean or well-groomed. A few were clearly mentally disturbed. But in my experience, they were uniformly polite, respectful, and grateful for the food and shelter we offered. Typically, several of them would help serve the meal, wash dishes, clean up afterwards. It was my practice always to try and speak with several of the men as they settled in for the night, to learn a little bit about their story and their situations. One of the homeless men that I met was a 57-year-old gentleman. I'll call him Jim. Earlier in his life, Jim had been a Navy pilot and then a commercial pilot for 18 years. He'd had a home and a wife, well, several wives, in fact. But he'd fallen on hard times when arthritis and other unspecified problems had made it impossible for him to continue flying. And as we sat on the floor that evening and talked, he held onto my hand. And I had the very real sense that what Jim needed more than anything else was for someone just to acknowledge his story, to respect his humanity, and the fact that here was an individual of worth and of dignity in spite of his current circumstances. Jim needed to know that he mattered, not for anything he had done or for what he had accomplished, certainly not because he fit the expectations of the way anybody should be living their life at 57 years old, but just because he was Jim, a beloved child of God. You know, I think a similar thing could be said of every person that we helped through our cold weather shelter program. But you know what? I'm pretty sure that the same could be said of every person hearing my voice this morning. Which of us doesn't need to feel that we matter? That we are individuals of worth and dignity, no matter what we might have done or what our circumstances in life. And I'm very proud that we in this church have been able to offer a bit of that assurance and comfort to so many people over the past 50 years. Well, that's a nice thought, you might say. But I thought this sermon was supposed to be about witness. What does that have to do with witness? Well, to my way of thinking, just about everything. But to see why requires a certain re-envisioning and a reinterpreting of what witness is really all about and what it's not about. Because often when we hear the word witness in a Christian context, it brings to mind certain associations. Another word that's often used as a synonym with Christian witness is evangelism. And unfortunately, that's a word that has gained some pretty unsavory connotations, particularly within the more progressive Christianity, the kind that we practice in this church. I wouldn't be at all surprised to learn that some of you are thinking something like this. Isn't evangelism about religious arm twisting? About people you don't really want to talk to interrupting your dinner 3 times in 1 week to tell you you're going to hell? About some religious crazies on street corners shoving literature in your face? About flinty-eyed televangelists asking for money? In fact, let's just tell it like it is. Isn't evangelism really about being obnoxious, self-righteous, invasive, annoying, pushy, and smug, all the while telling anybody willing to listen how much happier they'd be if they'd just go and do likewise? You know, it seems to me that giving witness in much of the Christian community can be characterized by 2 overriding convictions. First is the absolute certainty that their religious truth is the only truth that matters. And second, the equally absolute certainty that God isn't going to cut you any slack unless you're buying precisely what they're selling. Is it any wonder that much of progressive Christianity has distanced itself from giving witness in that sense? One Unitarian minister even wrote that at times in his career, it would have meant taking his life into his own hands to have given a sermon that included the words Unitarian and evangelism in the same sentence. But all that leaves us in kind of a catch-22 situation, doesn't it? On the one hand, we have this healthy disdain for anything that smacks of religious arm-twisting. We rightly ask, isn't everyone entitled to chart their own path to God? Isn't all truth God's truth, no matter the source or the messenger? And maybe most important, who am I to tell anyone what they should believe? But on the other hand, don't we as committed Christians have an obligation to spread the good news of Jesus Christ? After all, didn't Jesus tell his followers to go and make disciples of all nations? We've even given that directive from Jesus a pretty highfalutin name. We call it the Great Commission. That makes it sound pretty important, doesn't it? The Great Commission. So can we really call ourselves Christians if we're not out there pounding the pavements in search of souls to save? So how can we reconcile these 2 conflicting views? You know, it strikes me that the answer to that question is really quite simple. It's right there in the very meaning of the word evangelism. You see, that word comes from the Greek root meaning messenger. And over time, it's also come to mean the content of the message, the good news or the gospel that the messenger bears. So an evangelist, a witness for Christ, is nothing more or less than the bearer of good news. And who doesn't like to be the bearer of good news? The question is deciding what that good news is, how best to deliver it, and who is the appropriate audience. And that, my friends, is where we part ways with some of our Christian brothers and sisters. Because personally, I don't think it's such good news when someone tells me that the God I worship is a vengeful and vindictive tyrant just looking for any excuse to condemn me, or that God punishes the innocent for the acts of the guilty, something we hear whenever there's a natural disaster, particularly if it happens in a blue state. And what's so good about a vision of God as a celestial bean counter, tallying every failing and foible later to exact a terrible payment? What's so good about hearing that the God who created you somehow gave you a fatal flaw that means you have to choose either to be holy or to be happy because you can't do both? And what's so good about the news that God has condemned the vast majority of humanity to eternal damnation merely because they never had the opportunity or the inclination to embrace Christianity? No, I don't consider that to be good news at all. In fact, I consider it blasphemy to accuse God of being so petty, so capricious, so small-minded, in a word, so human. That's not the kind of good news that I care to deliver. So if that's what witnessing is all about, you can count me out. But I don't believe that it is. You see, in this church, we preach a different version of the good news. And here it is in a nutshell. God is love, a love that desires only the best for us, a love that reaches out to us even when we turn away, a love that searches for us even when we hide, a love that forgives us even when we have trouble forgiving ourselves, a love that is so universal, unconditional, and expansive that it's available to everyone without exception. And it doesn't really matter if you believe what I believe or worship the same way that I worship, because it's not up to me to exclude you from the circle of God's love. On the contrary, my responsibility is just to reflect the light of God's love into your life. So if witnessing means sharing that good news, then count me in. Because that's the good news that's made a real difference in my life. And if I can help someone else by offering it, why wouldn't I want to? It's good news that I can offer as a precious gift, not as an ultimatum. Good news that I can deliver with joy and with hope, not with fear and condemnation. Good news that I can share as an invitation to participate in my blessings, not as a badge of my membership in some exclusive club. I'm happy to witness to that good news any day of the week. Let's see what our gospel reading for today has to say about witnessing. First, I need to set the scene. It's the evening of that first Sunday morning, or that first Easter Sunday. In the early hours of that morning, some women followers of Jesus had gone to the tomb and encountered an angel who had told them Jesus had risen. Peter and John had gone to the tomb. They'd seen the burial wrappings laying off to the side, but didn't find Jesus' body. And now it's the evening of that same day, and two disciples are making their way home to their small village of Emmaus. They, no doubt, are profoundly distressed by the events of the past few days, sorrowful at the brutal and unjust execution of their friend and mentor Jesus, and deeply confused by the rumors that the women had reported a strange encounter with that angel proclaiming that Jesus had risen. As they walk along, discussing these things, they encounter a stranger on the road who asks them what they are discussing so earnestly. The one named Cleopas asks him, "Are you the only stranger in Jerusalem who does not know the things that have taken place in these days?" And so they tell him of the death of Jesus and rumors that he has risen. So let's go on to our reading. This is from Luke chapter 24. Then he said to them, "Oh, how foolish you are, and how slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have declared. Was it not necessary that the Messiah should suffer these things and then enter into his glory? Then, beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he interpreted to them the things about himself in all the scriptures. As they came near the village to which they were going, he walked ahead as if he were going on. But they urged him strongly, saying, "Stay with us, because it's almost evening and the day is now nearly over." So he went in to stay with them. When he was at the table with them, he took bread, blessed and broke it, and gave it to them. Then their eyes were opened and they recognized him, and he vanished from their sight. They said to each other, "Were not our hearts burning within us while he was talking to us on the road, while he was opening the scriptures to us?" That same hour they got up and returned to Jerusalem, and they found the 11 and their companions gathered together. They were saying, "The Lord has risen indeed. He has appeared to Simon." Then they told what had happened on the road and how he had been made known to them in the breaking of the bread. You know, to me, this story exemplifies what witnessing is all about. After these two disciples recognized Jesus, they immediately went to tell their friends what they had seen and heard. And isn't that how it always is with profound, life-changing experiences? You just can't keep them inside you. You just have to tell everyone you meet. And you have to keep telling people about them, because telling them tells people who you are. Telling them keeps the experience alive for you. For these two disciples, the world has just changed, and they've changed with it, because now they know Jesus is not dead. He's alive. They've seen him. They've had an encounter with the risen Christ, and they need to share it. But notice, it's not about trying to convince anyone of anything. They know that the good news they have to share can bring hope and comfort to the other disciples, can offer solace to their grieving friends, and hopefully give them the strength they need to carry out that mission that Jesus has left them with. The one who taught them to feed the hungry, to clothe the naked, to visit the sick or the imprisoned would still be with them. From this point forward, whenever they advocated for social justice, whenever they lifted up the marginalized, whenever they treated their fellow humans with compassion, they could be assured that Jesus would be there with them. Good news indeed. But good news offered as a gift, not as a weapon or an indictment. And it's the same good news that's available to us today. Jesus has risen. God is with us. But with whom should we share it? In that old way of thinking, that would be anyone who doesn't believe precisely what I believe or worship the way I do. Because according to that view, witness is the duty of every Christian, because we have to save the souls of those heathens out there who are so ignorant, so benighted, or so cursed that they can't or won't see the truth. But here's the thing. I don't think witnessing has anything much to do with saving souls. In fact, I don't think that's even within our power. That's God's job. And as Reverend Martin would often say, the job of God is taken, and you didn't get it. The souls of my Jewish and Muslim and Buddhist and Hindu friends are in much better hands than mine. And I trust that God honors and rewards the integrity and the sincerity of their spiritual journeys. They don't need me to look after their souls. And what a tremendous relief that is, because I can stop worrying about saving souls. But that doesn't mean I'm off the hook, because I still have the duty of saving lives. There are plenty of individuals out there whose lives could be saved, or at least changed for the better, by the good news of God's inclusive love that we in this church have to offer them. Just think of some lesbian teen abused and rejected by her family and now trying to make it on the streets. Think of some young gay man longing for meaning and purpose in his life, but trying to find it in alcohol, drugs, or anonymous sex. Think of the people who can't even imagine that God blesses their relationship because it just doesn't fit their society's approved model. Think of the transgender person who wonders if there's a church community anywhere that will accept her exactly as she is. Think of all the men and women in our community who have internalized the lie that God hates them for who they are and whom they love. Think of the parents who despair of ever finding a church home where their children will encounter a God who is not racist, not sexist, not homophobic. And finally, think of all the individuals out there who just desperately need to hear that they matter to someone. Despite their age or illness or disability or the mistakes they've made on their journey, people like Jim, remember him? How differently his story might have gone if Jim, earlier in his life, had found a caring, welcoming Christian community willing to tell him, "Jim, you do matter. You are valuable. You are someone." Or more to the point, if they had found him. Because it can't be up to the gems of this world to find the community they so desperately need. That's our job. That's what witnessing should be about. That's the kind of witnessing that would have made a difference in Jim's life. And yes, it's wonderful that we provide a self, secure, welcoming faith community here at Uprising. But that's not enough if those who need us don't know we're here. You know, we're often told that this church is one of the best kept secrets in Central Texas. But how can that be when there are around 150 people here on a given Sunday? If each of those 150, each of you, told just one other person, who told just one other person, pretty soon there wouldn't be anyone in Central Texas who didn't know about this church without walls. And just maybe there'd be fewer gems out there believing that there's no hope of finding a community for them. I don't think Jim needed anyone to save his soul. He needed someone to save his life. He needed what we all need, a sense of value, a sense of belonging, a caring community. And we've got one of those right here. Let's share it. You know, community is a funny thing. The more of it you share, the more of it you have. Over the course of those several years when we participated in the cold weather shelter program, a number of those homeless men told me they particularly like sheltering with us. Can you guess why? Well, several told me it was because we didn't shove religion down their throats. Apparently, some other participating churches took those freezing nights as an opportunity to practice their brand of evangelism on a captive audience. But we never did that. We treated all of our guests with dignity and respect, and I hope that each one of them felt they were welcome here, no matter whether they believed as we believed or not. But on those freezing nights, I would often see some of them reading our bulletin boards or the literature that we had lying about, and more than a few of them asked about this church and what we believed, and we told them. And I have to wonder if just maybe a few of those homeless men might not have recognized Jesus in our breaking of bread with them. I know that I did. Let me tell you a little story. The great 19th century Scottish novelist Robert Louis Stevenson began life as a frail and sickly child. He spent much of his time watching the world through his bedroom window. And one evening at dusk, he watched an elderly lamplighter making his way down the street outside, lighting one after another the gas street lamps. Stevenson's nurse asked him what he was doing, and he said, "I'm watching that old man knock holes in the darkness." Knocking holes in the darkness, that's what witnessing should be about. It's about knocking holes in the darkness of ignorance, hopelessness, loneliness, despair, poverty. It's about creating a warm, well-lighted, safe space for those who just need a little comfort, a little company, a little rest on their journey. It's about making sure that those who need that sanctuary know that it's there for them. It's not about telling people what to believe. It's about being willing to show people that you found something worth believing in. It's not about banging on doors. It's about leaving a door open for someone who may need a refuge. It's not even so much about preaching the gospel. It's about living the gospel in such a way that your light will shine into the world. And I don't really think it's about saving souls. It's about saving lives by providing community, dignity, hope, and the assurance that each person matters to God and to us. If we just do that, God will take care of the souls, theirs and ours. I'd like to close with a wonderful little poem It's called Exaltation by Linda M. Underwood. All this talk of saving souls. Souls weren't made to save like Sunday clothes that give out at the seams. They're made for wear. They come with lifetime guarantees. Don't save your soul. Pour it out like rain on cracked, parched earth. Give your soul away or pass it like a candle flame. Sing it out or laugh it up the wind. Souls were meant for hearing broken hearts, for puzzling dreams, remembering August flowers, forgetting hurts. Those men who talk of saving souls, they have the look of bullies who blow out candles before you sing happy birthday and want the world to be in alphabetical order. I will spend my soul playing it out like sticky string into the world so I can catch every last thing I touch. My friends, I'm willing to bet there are people in your life today who need to hear about God's extravagant love for them just as they are. People who need to hear there's a faith community that will welcome them and cherish their uniqueness. So why not witness that good news to them this week? Who knows? You might just save someone's life. Amen.